ten wykład będzie po angielsku i tych, którzy nie rozumieją, proszę iść tam, żeby dostać taki, żeby rozumieć po angielsku. Tak, w porządku? Wszystkie te, kto nie rozumie. Dobrze. To jak ja powiedziałem, wczoraj ja muszę siedzieć, to jest problem. Nie mogę stać taki długi czas. Okej. Okay. Today's lecture, the topic of today's lecture, everybody can see me because yesterday people complained. Yesterday people complained that they don't see me. You don't hear me. Is okay? Good. Fine. No, dobrze. Jak się widzi? Okay. Any other complaints before we start? So far, so good. Okay. So... Kwiatek? A, ten. Proszę bardzo. Dobrze. Ja chciałem być piękny, ale to jakoś nie idzie. Good. The lecture of today is dedicated to new discoveries in Jerusalem. The thing is that I have to ask, first of all, a very interesting question, which may be superfluous. Why to dig in Jerusalem? Because usually an archaeologist, when he comes to dig in a city, what does he want to know? He wants to know the history of the city. That's what he wants to know. And in the case of Jerusalem, we've got so much information about the city. It comes from ancient Egyptian writings, it comes from Babylonian writings, it comes from the Old Testament, it comes from the New Testament, it comes from Josephus Flavius, it comes from Roman sources, it comes from pilgrims, it comes from documents on property, all kind of things of immovable. So altogether, the amount of information we have in Jerusalem is so great that when you analyze it, you have got really a lot of information. The problem is that what information doesn't give us, the precise location of places. For example, if I go to the Crusader period, where we have got many people who gave their house after their death to the church, and they start to describe the house. It was on this street, on the right-hand side lived Mr. So, on the left-hand side lived that one, behind was this, in front of the house was a church. You know, such precise descriptions that it is fantastic. But how do I know where it is? All the description is beautiful. Only archaeology, when you find it, only then you can say where it is. And I'll tell you the truth, that when we have published the Card of Jerusalem, which was excavated in the 80s, we found Crusader houses, and we could create an entire, because of documents, because most of the people on this street dedicated their houses after their death to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So in the documents of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, every house described, I live here, on my right-hand side is Mr. A, the one who lives at the building next, and on my side, right-hand side is Mr. A. And so I know that he is Mr. A, the writer of the document, and who is living in the third building. And so we managed to create an entire, entire ref of houses, the property of houses in one place. Moreover, when we read about the people in Jerusalem, where they live, from their names, we know what nationality they are, we know where their neighborhood is, and so we are building really a map of the city all the time. The more we dig, the more we know. Now, when we have chosen the topic of new excavations of Jerusalem, the idea was to start it from 1967. 1967 marks the unification of Jerusalem, when after the Six-Day War, Jerusalem again came under one, I will say, ownership. When you could dig in a place in the middle of the city, before you could not do it. Because if you got closer, let's say, to the city walls, which was under Jordan, the Jordanian did not allow to dig because it was on the border with Israel. On the other hand, the Israelis did not allow to dig closer to the Jordanian border. And so we have a lacoon of a great area which could not be excavated. So now, actually, we can dig everywhere in the city, and it is a very, very important moment in the history of Jerusalem. Moreover, even the British, when they ruled Palestine, they could not come to places. They were afraid, for example, with the army and everything, to go, let's say, into the Muslim quarter. And what we have, I'll show you things which are discovered in the Muslim quarter, which you can always ask, how come before us no one has seen it? Simply because since the beginning of the serious study of Jerusalem in the 20s, the British did not dare to go there. So it was unknown, it was completely unexplored. The important thing to say from the scientific point of view, all the excavations which were carried out under the British mandate or deep by the British themselves, far away from the Israeli border, where they excavations there were very interesting and very important. But you must know that the principle is any dig you do hardly solves problem, but it creates many more problems. You understand? It's exactly the you have to try and to find solution to problems which you believe archaeology will solve, and it is not as simple as that. Not always it is like that. The contrary. Sometimes they add more questions to answer. Now, I will say generally, in grosso modo, I will say that since the beginning of the scholarly study of Jerusalem, till 1948, when Jerusalem was divided, or rather I will say to 67 when it was reunited, I will say many excavations took place, many questions were asked. I will say that since 1967 up to date, because we have got some excavations which you see in the picture, which are very recent, and they, actually those questions are being answered. I will show you another thing. For example, I'll bring a picture which you can wonder why when I speak about new excavations, I will bring the Dome of the Rock. You know, this is the mosque with the golden dome which you always see in Jerusalem. Nothing was excavated there. You cannot dig. So why still did I bring it here? Because thanks to the decoration, which we now understand the meaning, I'm able to explain a lot about the history of this building. You understand? Through the decoration which everybody knows. But the new interpretation is like that. And that's why it is so important. And therefore I brought it. Because what we have here is sometimes you discover in Jerusalem something which is tiny, you know, I'll show you some things. What importance does it have? It has a great importance to understand the history of the city. Now, what we see, the first picture which we see, shows us Jerusalem, the old city. Now, you can see very well the old city, which is a square, and down below it has, on both sides, it has the city of David. I don't know how many of you have been yesterday, but yesterday we showed it, and Mount Zion, which is on the left. You can see very well the city wall running in the south, connecting itself to the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is this big square with the two mosques on top of it. And from there, the wall runs surrounding Jerusalem. We always guessed that the city wall, the line of the city wall, as we see today, was decided by Emperor Hadrian, because one of the most crucial events in the history of Jerusalem was that Emperor Hadrian, when he made his empire round tour in 129 AD, he went everywhere, and wherever he went, He finished to build buildings which were built for centuries. For example, the famous temple of Apollo in Didyme, the famous temple of Zeus in Athens, many, many things. Moreover, in England, he built a Hadrian Wall, and then he came to Jerusalem, and he saw Jerusalem as a destroyed city. He decided to found it as a pagan city, which he called Elia Capitolina. Elia Capitolina, Elia was his first name. His the full name was Publius Elius Hadrianus, and the deities, the gods of the city, was the Capitoline Triad, Jupiter, Juno, and Minerva. And so their cult was in Jerusalem. If I will have the chance to come here again and tell you about the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where Jesus is believed to be buried, or as I say with confidence, where Jesus is buried, you'll understand that it is extremely important to know the Roman city. And only to prove the size of the city, the arrangements of the streets, you can see very well in the picture, the long street which comes from one side of the city to the other. Okay, I'm sorry, because the laser pointer cannot work. It is transparent, so it doesn't work. Yes. So at any rate, Metsuyan, okay, Tisharpo. At any rate, the interesting thing is that the city today, we knew exactly how it was. But what we did not know, and we know today, who built the walls around the city. Because Emperor Hadrian did not have to build fortifications. You know why? Such an important city did not need walls, because the 10th Roman legion, the one who conquered Jerusalem in 70 AD, stayed in Jerusalem till the end of the 3rd century. You see, for almost over 230 years, he was in Jerusalem, and one legion for Jerusalem was a great thing. I always explain that Spain, which is one of the largest countries in Europe today, had one Roman legion. Jerusalem, less than 1 square kilometer, had one Roman legion. The Romans were afraid that the Jews will rebel again, and therefore they kept a whole legion in Jerusalem. It did not help much, because 60 years after the fall of the temple, we had the second revolt, which was even worse and more fierce than the first one. So understand that the Romans had good reasons why to fear the Jews. Now, when the city wall was built, was only after the Roman legion left Jerusalem. And it happens not much time, about 295. And remember that 335, 40 years later, Jerusalem becomes Christian under Emperor Constantine, who built the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Church of the Nativity, the Church of Mount of Olives, the Church of Katisma, and other places which we'll speak if we have to during the lecture. So altogether, Jerusalem, out of a provincial Roman city, becomes the spiritual city of the world. And therefore, fortification was necessary now, and the city wall was built there. So as you see, it is really of great importance just to look at this map. When Emperor Hadrian decided that it was a new city, he could not build a Roman city on a hilly city, because the streets are parallel, perpendicular to each other, parallel, and therefore he decided to leave out two very important sections of the city. The city of David, which we have seen yesterday, and Mount Zion. And so actually he could make Jerusalem into a square city, as we see. And why do I jump when I describe the history of Jerusalem? I jump straight away to the Roman, because actually, if somebody tries to define Jerusalem today, I can say as follows. The plan of the old city of Jerusalem, when I speak about Jerusalem historically, it's always the old city. So I will say, The plan of the Roman city is the plan of the city is Roman, but the functions of the city, the buildings, for example, the fact that you walk today in markets along the main arteries of the city, this is all Crusader. And I'll show you some very interesting example to that. So Jerusalem is a Roman city by plan, Crusader by function, and the buildings themselves, which you see, are mostly Mamluk and Ottoman. Mamluk is 14th-15th century, and Ottoman from the 16th century till, let's say, the 20th century. You see, so actually three components make Jerusalem as it is today. Now, when we go, the first thing which I want to show is this one. This one is a segment of excavations on the hill of the city of David. What is the problem? Many of the people who are of the scholars who talk about the personality of King David. And King David is extremely important in connection to Jerusalem. I don't have to tell you about that. All the three religions believe in the presence of King David in Jerusalem, which is very essential to them. And what happens? The city of David, which you have just have seen, which is the historical nucleus of Jerusalem, does not show any remains of King David. And when we talk about King David, many of the scholars, some of them are in Israel, very few in the University of Tel Aviv, but Denmark is famous with that, Scotland is famous in that, that they've got scholars who say that King David never existed, that King David was a legend. And one of the proofs to that was the fact that if King David was such a great king, as he is mentioned in the Old Testament, how come that in his capital there is nothing from the days of King David? How can it be? What kind of a capital of a great king that nothing is left, nothing is there? So it was really a real problem. I explain to you that it stems from the fact that since 1880, when a German scholar, Hermann Goethe, he understood that Jerusalem, historical Jerusalem, is on the hill of the city of David. If you remember yesterday, I explained, because it has the only perennial spring, and water is, of course, you cannot have a city without water, because till his days, because of a mistake of Josephus Flavius, everyone believed that the biblical, the Old Testament Jerusalem, was on Mount Zion. That's what they believe. And therefore, since then, when Hermann Goethe said, no, it is on the hill of the city of David, people started to dig. The excavations in the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century were completely incompetent. They did not know yet the science of pottery, which we know today, and all other means to date. And the result is that nothing of King David was discovered. Unfortunately, because of all of those excavations, the hill of the city of David is completely pierced by ancient excavations. So one of my friend, she took all the excavations which were carried, which marked the areas on the hill which they have excavated, and she found that a little place, a little area, was not excavated before. So she started to dig there. And she came down and she saw what you see, which is very poor, but still, you see what you see in this picture is actually for the first time that on the hill of the city of David were remains from the 10th century. 10th century. 10th century is essentially King David and King Solomon. This is the period. And so we say that actually there could have been much more. The problem is that a lot of the remains of the 10th century have disappeared because of the excavations which were carried before. And more than that, when Jerusalem was rebuilt so many times that any morsel of information which we get, we should be grateful for, because this is really what we have. And the thing is that we were very happy with the discovery. You see here another, the same picture, but it shows you another side. And on purpose, I'm happy there is a man walking there. And you can see that the size of the building with its thick walls and everything is really a very important feature. Unfortunately, we cannot dig the whole area to have a full picture because you see there is a fence, and it is some of the houses there belong to local inhabitants, and we cannot disturb them. So that's why we did it. Actually, we can define today, after knowing so much about the city of David, that the city of David is the Mount of Jerusalem. When I say, you know, the term mount, or in Hebrew and Arabic, tel, means a hill on which one layer after the other was accumulated. Jerusalem, you've got in Megiddo, you've got Hazor, all the famous biblical cities. Also, Jerusalem has its tel. The tel, the mount, is the city of David. And what happens there? Building one above the other, one above the other, till it was actually forsaken for the first time in its history in the Muslim period. And the reason is that earthquake destroyed the city walls, and people were afraid to live outside of the city wall. So when the city wall, which surrounded the city of David, was destroyed, people moved into the city itself, and so then, since then, the city is not inhabited anymore. Now, as we go on, there is something which is very important. This is not from Jerusalem. This is two fragments of a stone which were discovered in Tel Dan, which is the northernmost city in Israel, just below Mount Hermon. And this is actually one of the most important cities in the northern part of the country. In this site, which was excavated, you know what? Everybody who has been to the country goes there, because from the center of the Tel comes out from the ground one of the three tributaries of River Jordan, the tributary which is called Dan. Dan, like my private name. You see, Dan. It is one of the 12 tribes. Why is it so important? Because this was installed in the city by the king of Aramea, the capital of which was Damascus. And he, as we know from the Bible, had a fight against Israel, and he won the battle, and he conquered Tel Dan. Not only Dan, but all the northern part of the country, which included Hazor, Bet Macha, and many, many others. The interesting thing is that he put the stelae to describe his victory over the Israelites. Now remember one thing. It was in the middle of the 9th century, which means about almost 100 years after the kingdom of David and Solomon was divided to the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel, as everybody knows. When the king of the Arameans wanted to define the area which he has conquered, you know how he called it? He did not call it Israel. He called it the House of David. And in this inscription, yes, in this inscription, what is written there, I vanquished the house of Israel, the house of David. In other words, for him, although it is a different state, and it is 100, David died in around 960, this is from 870, something like that. Still, the memory of David was so strong that he calls it the House of David. And it is amazing, first of all, to see that David is not a legend. It is an historical person, which you see here. The people who do not agree to the... I'm laughing because it's funny. The people who do not agree that David was an historical figure, they say that this is actually a fake stone. But since I saw how it was taken out of the ground, believe me, it is not fake at all. Yes, because I'll tell you why. Because sometimes in excavations, the volunteers, they've got always a permanent, every volunteer, every time, every dig I had with volunteers, they always inscribe something on the pottery shard, and they bury it in the ground, and they, when I'm there, they will come, take it down, they go, look, it is written, and so on, they're very happy. They don't know that archaeologists cannot be fouled about it. And it is all. So you see, this is extremely, extremely important, because suddenly the 10th century BC comes out. I will tell you something even more important. When you look at this jar, here is an Hebrew inscription. Now, if I find here one who will be able to read it, I'll be very happy. Why? Because this is the beginning of alphabet, and it is written in the most, it is written in the most primitive Hebrew, which only those who deal with script and understand the development of a script, they will actually show, they believe that they have deciphered it. It is on a jar. In other words, this should be dated to the 11th century, even before King David, maybe to the Jebusites or other people who lived in the Jerusalem at that time. If I had time, I would have told you who the Jebusites are and how come that King David took Jerusalem. Its name was so strange, as one of the many nations who lived in the country. But this, I'm afraid, will have to leave to another time. The excavations in the city of David occurred many times. What we see here are the excavations which the British did. First of all, in 1925, they discovered the tower, which you see, the tower which you see on top of the picture. They identified it as the city wall from the Old Testament period. But Kathleen Kenyon, a British archaeologist who excavated in Jerusalem, she was not happy with this city wall. And I will tell you why. Yesterday I showed you a whole system of water in Jerusalem. And amongst other things, I showed you yesterday, I don't know how many of you have been here yesterday, but those who have not, to explain that there was in Jerusalem a system that even in case of siege, there will be an access down to the spring of Jerusalem, which is outside the city. They cover the spring with great fortifications, which I'll show you, and they had a kind of a shaft by which you could draw down a bucket and to lift water to Jerusalem under siege. The upper opening of the shaft was outside of this city wall. So Kathleen Kenyon, this British archaeologist, said it cannot be, because if the idea is to protect the access to the access to the water, then it must be that the upper issue of the shaft will be included inside the city. If this is outside, then this wall cannot be from the First Temple period. Very rightly so. So she started on the whole slope to dig trenches all the time, and according to the Jordanian law, every place which you have excavated, you have to bring it back to its situation as it was before they excavated. So what did she do? She made a trench, Trench A, and then below she started another trench, and with the soil from Trench B she filled Trench A, with Trench C she filled Trench B, from D C, from E D, and so actually she covered completely the slope, and even in some places, because of the steepness, she built also those terraces, you see, because after the fill she was afraid that it might crumble, so she put these kind of things. At the end, in the bottom, you can see in this picture, you can see actually another city wall, which she identified as the city wall from the First Temple period, or maybe even before, and then the upper opening of the shaft was inside the city, and so it was perfect with what we know. As you understand, what I show you here comes from the time of Kathleen Kenyon. So it's not a new dig. It was done when Jerusalem was divided between Israel and Jordan. So why do I tell you that? In 1984, we started new sessions of excavations in Jerusalem. And then we discovered a whole city. For the first time that you have got a whole quarter of the city, down below you can see a city wall, and above it you can see houses and things. And you know what the most exciting thing is? That we found there a whole system of sewage drainage. And even, if you will not laugh, I will tell you that we found four toilet seats made of stone. I don't know how pleasant it is to sit on it in winter, but still, four toilet seats, first time in history of our country, four toilet seats. Now, so this is a city wall, but the important thing was that we wanted to know more. You can see a house, a woman is sitting, and down below, before that house, you can see a kind of a step structure, which was already discovered before Kenyon, in the 20s, but people could not identify it. But now, because of some point of contact, we know that this lower terrace, an enormous step terrace, is connected to the remains of David's palace, was so-called David's palace, you know, which I showed you before. You remember the two slides I showed you. So now we understand that King David made an enormous work in Jerusalem at that time. So all the belief that David did not do anything in Jerusalem, or that his city was so poor, changes its face today. To us, it is a very, very important discovery. Because only now, when we excavate those houses, it was only now that we can date the stone step structure, which archaeologists who excavated it before could not do. We could do it actually now. This picture is showing you a very interesting picture of Jerusalem as it looks now today. I'm not going to the story inside the city, but you can see outside the city, you can see great fortifications, the one mostly to the right in the picture, which are the protection of the system of the defense of the spring, because spring is the most important thing you can imagine in a city. The interesting thing, and now listen to that well, the interesting thing that this system includes the little wall, which I showed you when I showed you all the terraces, down below I showed you an ancient wall, and I said she didn't know exactly how to date it. We know that now it is a part of the system of the defense of the spring in the 18th century BC. Imagine, almost 4,000 years ago. And if you remember, those who listened to me yesterday, I have explained that this is the time which I believe is the time of the Patriarch, the first time that Jerusalem is mentioned in the Old Testament, when Abraham, coming back from the battle against the kings of the Dead Sea, he is giving tenth of the looting which he took from those kings, and he gives it to Melchizedek, the king of Salem. That's the first time that Jerusalem is mentioned. And it is so important, first of all, in Christianity, because of that sin, and also because in Psalms, God said that Melchizedek is my eternal priest. I don't know if you remember it. In medieval era, Melchizedek was identified with Jesus. And in Christianity, for example, if you go to the great cathedral of Strasbourg, then you can see Abraham, Melchizedek, and little Isaac between the two of them. Very exciting to make him equal to Abraham. Now, this is a part of the city. You can see the wall on the left, an earlier city wall on the right. Why did they build city walls one above the other? It's because of the terraces. It is a very steep slope. The point is that unfortunately, because of previous excavations, because of dwellings and things, the best preserved part for us archaeologists to work is on the eastern slope of the hill of the city of David. And the reason for that is very interesting. Because when, remember I told you, that Only in 1880, a German scholar understood that the city of David is the historical core. Many expeditions came to dig. A Jewish intellectual in Paris said, why only the non-Jews are digging there? This is our heritage. Why don't we dig there? And they managed to organize an expedition, at the head of which was a Jewish archaeologist who worked for the Louvre in Paris and who was an expert on Egypt, Raymond Weil, and they invited him to be the head. Money was given by the Rothschilds. But Rothschild, Baron Rothschild, said, not only I'll give you money for the dig, but I will also purchase, buy for you all the possible pieces of land which are on the hill of the city of David. And he managed to buy all the eastern slope of the hill, the result of which was that it was left untouched, and so we could dig it now. So most of the excavations, which you'll see when you visit the hill of the city of David, were carried out on the eastern slope. So on the eastern slope, you can see here the city of David as it is. Closer to the temple, in order to understand better, you see, I remember that I told you that a friend of mine, she found any place which was not excavated. She found also here, closer to the Temple Mount, a city wall, which is the black line, and here is a city gate, which was added in the 8th century BC. Very important. Why is it important? Because in the Old Testament, it tells us that Jotham, one of the king of Judah, built the wall of the Ophel. She found inside here, Peter, I cannot bring you so many pictures, many jars with royal stamps on them. Many, many discoveries which show how well organized was the kingdom of Judah in the time of mostly King Hezekiah, the greatest, maybe besides King David and Solomon, the greatest king of Israel, who ruled somewhere from around 700 BC. There was the greatest of all. Now, the point is that also yesterday, I've pointed at this spring. This is the upper of the two pools which later make the pool of Bethesda, where Jesus made his miracle healing the paralytic. And the important thing is that on the dam which separates, because here is only one pool, the second pool lower was added after, but it was the whole project of this was made in order to supply water to the new city which King Hezekiah built on the hill of Mount Zion. It was a great development in the history of Jerusalem. Because later, as you see it now, you see it is an enormous pool. You can see here the same dam which you saw before in the drawing. You see that it is very big, but this is when it was already coated, covered with big stones. The dam from the first temple period is covered with big stones in the second temple period and so on. But I spoke about it yesterday, so I don't want to speak today. What about the Temple Mount? The Temple Mount is very, very enigmatic. We know that on the side of the Dome of the Rock was built. This is the site of the Holy of Holies. This is the site of the Holy of Holies. Otherwise, there is a problem, because whoever did something on the Temple Mount, the first thing to do was to remove soil, to reach bedrock, and to build another building on it. Fortunately, we know exactly, if you remove the carpets from the Dome of the Rock, you'll find below, right below, you'll find natural bedrock. A Franciscan friar, where the Muslims allowed, when they did some works removing the carpets and so on, they allowed a Franciscan friar, Father Testa, to try and see, not to take pictures, but to draw whatever he sees. He did a drawing of every scratch in the rock, everything, but nothing is meaningful. We don't know, it doesn't mean anything. It was as if somebody, you know, during the walk, make a stretch here, a stretch there. There is nothing which can indicate anything, because we've got exact plans and pictures, and not pictures, but drawings, everything on it. The important thing is that today, And we have got so many documents which are coming mostly from a cachement of documents which was discovered in the Jewish synagogue of Cairo. It is all housed today in Cambridge, England. The British built for this cachement of over 100,000 documents, built a special house and a building and a curator which is in charge on all the documents which come from the library in Cairo. And there is a description of all kinds of things. I'll mention it later in details. But why do I bring it here now? The Dome of the Rock, as you see, is there. This is, by the way, as we understand the Temple Mount. I don't know, it is not clear enough. But you can see how the temple is built on the Temple Mount. And the center is the temple. The Holy of Holies is sitting right on the Dome of the Rock on the Temple Mount. Now, this is actually a drawing which was made by a French painter in the 19th century. His name was Lortet. Why is his picture so important? He did something very unusual. He was not a painter who will go out to paint. Already in his days, it was about, let's say, the 70s of the 19th century, photography was already quite popular. So he used to buy photographs or to get them for photographer and making drawings of the photographs. And we have, in this case, we have even the photograph. Why? Because the photograph was made by the official photographer of the royal family in England. And when the Prince of Wales at that time, who later became King Edward VII, when he came to Jerusalem, he came with a photographer. And the photographer took a picture, which we see here, which Lortet later copied into the drawing. I bring this one because this one, you know, is free for use to everybody. But if you look well, under the steps which exist today, you can see a very long line of steps going towards the right of the picture. I don't know, can you see it? You see it there. A long line, yes, if you look under the steps, and to the right, behind the two trees, you can see a line of steps which is going all the way to the end of the picture. This is very, very important. It will be very difficult to explain the whole thing, but I'll do it like this. We all know that after the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, when the patriots from Babylon came, they built another temple, which was temple number two. Temple number two was very poor, and the people who remembered the Temple of Solomon wept when they saw the substitute. This is actually mentioned very clearly a few times by Ezra. You see, very important fact. But suddenly in the 3rd century BC, which means about 200 years later, suddenly we have got in the Hellenistic period, we have got descriptions of a beautiful temple, magnificent temple, great, and they say the one who stands behind sees it as if going to sky, to heaven. Really great, great temple. Without any more details, because otherwise it will keep me for 2 hours here, the story is that in the 3rd century, in the Hellenistic period, a new temple and temple platform was built. We have exact description of this temple because this became the, I will say, the religious temple, the holy temple, temple and temple area. When today an observant Jew does not go to the Temple Mount because lest he may desecrate it, he can go to all what added later by King Herod the Great, which is the present Temple Mount. But on the Temple Mount lies a smaller Temple Mount, which is very important because this is the halachic, which means the one which according to the Jewish religion is the Temple Mount. The area which was added by King Herod was not considered holy, and it was allotted to the Gentile. And those of you who know the New Testament may recall, as we have got in the 2nd chapter of Acts, that Paul brought to the temple two Greeks, and the Jews were terribly angry at him. How dare you bring them here? Take them to their area. What is their area? The area which was added by King Herod the Great. You understand? Why did I bring it here? Because from the description which we have about the Holy Temple Mount, the Hellenistic Temple Mount, which we have got in the Talmud, they tell us that to go from the Herodian edition to the Holy Temple Mount, there were steps. And we believe that the steps which are drawn here, which don't exist anymore, these are the steps which mark the southern border of the Hellenistic Temple Mount. And this is a discovery which makes a real revolution in our understanding what it is. Now you can ask me, the picture is in the 19th century, why do you bring it as a new discovery? Simply because bringing this to the public, to the notion of the public, to the understanding what it is a completely new thing. I told you, but then I speak about excavations in Jerusalem, new discoveries in Jerusalem. It's not only with the hoe and the shovel. Many new things are a result of studies. And so we can build a more comprehensive picture of the city. Maybe one of the greatest discoveries in Jerusalem, which I'm proud is mine, we discovered great section of the western wall of the Temple Mount. I want to remind you that everybody knows in the western wall of the Temple Mount a section which is called in Hebrew the Kotel, or rather it is the praying plaza of the Jews against the western wall of the Temple. But the western wall of the Temple is 9 times longer than the praying plaza. You understand? The praying plaza is only 1/9 of the entire length of the western wall. All is covered under houses, under medieval houses. Also the western wall, the praying plaza, was covered under Muslim buildings. But an earthquake in 1546 uncovered it. Then it was exposed for the first time, which means the Jews started to pray only after. And indeed, the first document which tells us about a public prayer of Jews on the Western Wall is from 1655, which means Jews started to pray at the Western Wall only 1655 for the first time, to which we have a testimony. Amongst the other things, when we discovered in a long tunnel the entire length of the Western Wall, we found the stone, which you see in the picture, which starts on the right-hand side of the picture. You can see where the stone starts, and it ends where the man is standing there. Can you see? It is enormous. It is 14 meters long. It is 3.3 meters high. It is 4.7 deep. In other ways, it weighs about 600 metric tons. When I say 600 metric tons, it doesn't mean so much. But if I tell you that you see those enormous trucks which carry behind a trolley behind, and it goes, you know, it looks like a little train even, can take at most 80 tons. So it can tell you, I speak here about 600 metric tons. And don't ask me, how did they do it? I know that everyone wants to ask, because to this I've got an answer. Slowly, with patience, and being careful not to push the fingers inside. That's all. But the real question should be, why did they invest so much in doing it? Because this is the biggest stone. Another stone is only 2 meters long, but then comes another very big one, which is 12 meters. And then in the end is another one of 8 meters. All of the same size, enormous. Why did they do it? I think that they are a counterforce to a big vault, to a big storage on the Temple Mount. You know what counterforce is. When you have, let's say, the Notre Dame, no matter how much pressure you put on the roof, unless there is fire, but you see when you do it like that, it will never fall. Moreover, the most you cast pressure on a vault, stone vault, the more you cast pressure, the stronger it will be. But what happens? How come that there are so many churches where you see the roof disappeared? It will only, when the walls open, then it falls down. So what do they do? The Notre Dame is full of those buttresses. You understand? In order to avoid the opening of the walls. So what happens here, I believe, that inside is a big volume of storage or something, and instead of putting outside the Temple Mount to put counterforce those flying buttresses, they built such heavy stones that no pressure on the vault of the stone will be able to push it out. You see, it's good, because if you accept what I've said, then we have discovered a storage on the Temple Mount. Because when you see the temple, you know that people used to bring contribution to the temple of flour, wine, oil, grains, you know, all those kind of things. Where did they put it all? In the temple itself, we know that there was no place for such a thing. So you must assume that on the Temple Mount there was somewhere where there was storage. Maybe this is one of these, if I'm right, to explain those heavy stones as a counterforce to a storage. Another thing which we have found, and why do I bring a drawing? Because everything is so narrow that to take a picture is impossible. It is difficult. So here you can see the discovery at the back, you can see four vaults. These are the discoveries we have made in Jerusalem. These are the only remains of a great bridge which was built and which is mentioned by Josephus Flavius, which connected the Temple Mount in Jerusalem with the upper city of Jerusalem. Why did they make a bridge? They made a bridge because it carried an aqueduct to bring water from pools which are south of Bethlehem. Yesterday I showed slides of them. And it runs all the way through tunnels and bridges, all the way, and bring water to the temple. Because in Jerusalem, great quantities were necessary for ablution, for cleaning, for rinsing. I've shown down, there are below the lower two vaults, there are ritual baths. You can see the steps coming down. But in the middle, you can see a very curious ritual bath. But this is not meant for people, because water can reach only the two lower steps. No one can go and immerse himself there unless he lies deeply in the lowest one in very, very difficult way. This is made for tools, for implements, for instruments, for anything which a Jew will use. Because even to this very day, when a Jew buys, let's say, a pot from a non-Jew, he has to immerse it in a ritual bath in order to purify it. So this was good, because from the Talmud we know that when you wanted to purify something, you'll put it on the steps, you yourself will go down and throw water on it and so purify it. So this is really first time, in archaeology, that we have a ritual bath which is not meant for people. It is meant for vessels and instruments, pieces of furniture, for example. Any furniture which was contaminated had to be used or cleansed in a ritual bath. And you know, the Jews, the laws of purity are very, very important feature in Jewish religious life. One of the new discoveries, which is still going on, it is still going on, it is not finished, a beautiful street from Herod's time. Look at the beauty of the street, the size of the slabs. There are people at the back which I kept to show you the scale. Beautiful slabs which lead all the way from the Pool of Siloam all the way to the Temple Mount. Why from the Pool of Siloam to the Temple Mount? Because today we know the Pool of Siloam was excavated, we'll see it later, and water comes there by gravitation from the spring of Gihon, the only spring in Jerusalem. And so it was used, the Pool of Siloam was not only used for drinking, but mostly it was, probably they knew how to do it, that it was used for ritual immersion. And usually before going to the Temple Mount, you had to immerse yourself to be clean, not to touch anything on the way, and to go directly from the ritual bath to the temple. So what did they do? Herod made a beautiful street, which goes all the way. It is a matter of over 500 meters, a street which connects the Pool of Siloam with the Temple Mount. You cannot visit it yet because it is being excavated now, but the sewage below, because in Herod's time, as was the Roman habit, below the street there is a sewage canal. In the sewage canal you are able already to walk. The sewage canal is extremely important. Why is that? Josephus Flavius tells us that when the Romans conquered Jerusalem, many of the fighters found shelter in the sewage canals of Jerusalem. They were built very seriously as big passage and so on. So many hid there. And Josephus Flavius tells us how the Romans cast all kind of fires and everything to put out the Jews from this ritual bath. So from this sewage canal which is under the street. And I'll tell you what, it is so impressive, both of them. The street, as I said, unfortunately not finished yet. The work is still going on. And down below, the sewage canal. You see, this is the end of the street when it comes down with steps into the pool of Siloam. Very interesting is, on the left-hand side, you can see a big pipe. This is the sewage canal of the old city of Jerusalem today. And the interesting thing that they use the same course as the Herodian one, because actually the Pool of Siloam is the lowest point in Jerusalem, 690 meters below, above sea level. Where the rest of Jerusalem, the Temple Mount is 740, the top of this old city is 790, Mount of Olives 830. So you see that everything is pulling you down. If you want to put something out of the city, you pass by the Pool of Siloam. Don't worry, the historical sewage bypasses the pool in order not to contaminate the water of the pool. At one point along the street was discovered this strange monument, which nobody knows what it is. But the idea was that we have got in the Talmud, we have a story which tells us that on the street of Jerusalem, and probably it refers to this street because it is really the most important street on the city, there was a place where everybody who found something in the street will put it there. And when somebody lost something, he will go to this stone to look for the thing. Maybe somebody found it and put it on the stone. Very beautiful, very beautiful. We should trust each other so much today. This is the sewage canal below. You can see how serious it is. It is beautiful to walk along and to know that you are walking in something which is over 2,000 years is really beautiful. Moreover, today there are pipes there to supply air, so walking there is a very, very interesting thing. The important thing is, you see, this is another point of it. Really very, very exciting place to walk. Now look what was discovered there. This is a bell made of gold. Its size is about 3 centimeters. Well, a bell, gold, 3 centimeters, interesting. But you know what? The exciting thing is that in the Talmud it tells us that the high priest used to have on his skirt, I'd call it a skirt to give you the imagination how it was, bells, golden bells were sewed so that when he walks, I say in a funny way, like a leper, that everyone from distance will hear the high priest is coming, give respect. So imagine the size, the bells were in gold. So when you see this one, imagine what a discovery. Really, it is realization of life. That's how it was. And it is such a discovery. Who ever believed that what we read in the Talmud will be found? It is really a great and exciting discovery. Another exciting discovery in the sewage was this one. It is a Roman sword which is still inside its leather sheath. Imagine that, which means that inside, either it was taken as spoils by the Jews who hid in the sewage, or maybe it was a fight inside there and a Roman soldier lost it. At any rate, such a discovery of such a good, of course it is iron, so it has to be, and it was passed all kind of process of cleansing in the Israel Museum laboratories, but you can see a beautiful, beautiful Roman sword discovered there. Even more exciting is little this piece of stone. It is about 10, 12 centimeters, and somebody who knew that he had the image of the menorah, the lamp in the temple, the candelabrum, made a drawing of it. He was not a great draftsman, but two ideas are there. When all of us look at the Ark of Titus in Rome, everybody believes that it is true depiction of the menorah as it was in the temple, the candelabrum, but it was not. The candelabrum in the temple had a tripod, I mean three legs, and not this massive base as you see in the ark. Moreover, an analysis of the lamp, which is depicted on the Titus Ark in Rome, shows us a typical Roman, I will say, typical Roman, the cultic, I will say, candelabrum, nothing to do with Judaism, but it is very interesting. And I want to add something more. The more we are dealing with those kind of things, we've got another new understanding of the whole story. It is connected also with the study of the Church Father. And how is that? The story is that a Roman historian of the 3rd century wrote that in place of the Jewish temple, Emperor Hadrian built a temple to Jupiter, Juno, Minerva, the capital in Triad. So everybody was sure that on the site, on the Temple Mount, a pagan temple was built, and indeed, always you can see old map which depict historical Jerusalem, you'll find on the Temple Mount, you'll find the Temple of Jupiter. But the problem is serious. No archaeological discoveries there. Now, recently, because of the deliberations which we have, information from the Church Father and so on, we know that this temple was built on the site where later the Church of the Holy Sepulchre was built. When you went there, from understanding that that is the place where the Roman temple was, more discoveries, which were made mostly Franciscan friars, discovered the remains of the temple under the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And it is very important because now the whole understanding of early Christianity of Jerusalem is shifted from the Temple Mount into the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Because remember that Jesus said that the Temple Mount will be completely deserted. And more than that, at one point he even said, I can destroy it in 3 days and build it in 3 days. And all these agree very well with archaeological discovery. And I'll tell you why. Because Josephus Flavius, when he describes the temple, he describes to us that Herod built it in 6 years, he says in one place, and 9 years, he says in the other. Today we know, when Jesus was in Jerusalem, and it was 46 years, after the beginning of the works on it, he says something to the Jews. And the Jews answer him and say, how can you dare you say that you are building it in 3 days and destroy it in 3 days? We are already walking 46 years. Archaeological discovery, which we made in the Western Wall Tunnel, indicates that actually the works on the Temple Mount of Jerusalem were never finished. You see a point where the works on the Western Wall have completely disappeared. Now, we go on. Another thing which is extremely important, I see that I'm exceeding my time. Anyhow, a gate in the city on Mount Zion, which is a very important gate. because Josephus Flavius calls it the great gate of the Essenes. The Essenes are the people who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. And we know that the early Christians of Jerusalem, the early community of Jerusalem, lived along with the Essenes on Mount Zion. And those people who lived there, the early Christians, were the one who later will indicate to Constantine the Great where the tomb of Jesus was. Otherwise, he does not have any information whatsoever. The story that his mother discovered the place is told about 50 years after the church was built. This is Mount Zion, as you see. Beautiful mountain, very steep. The road, which you see in the middle of the slope, was built in 1964 when Pope Paul VI came to visit Jerusalem, and Jerusalem was still divided. We made this road so that the Pope will bypass Jordan and go straight to the Cenaculum, which is on the mountain. This is the Pool of Siloam, as it was believed to be, till excavations discovered the true one. The discovery of the true Pool of Siloam was so important that the historical pool, which you see here, which was built in the 5th century, is not anymore a place of pilgrim. The pilgrimage today to the Pool of Siloam is to the real pool and not to the 5th century, mostly covered today by a Muslim mosque. Now, I will run quickly only to show you a few points. For example, this one. Here we have remains which were excavated again, discovered and described by Josephus Flavius. A Kurdish family from northern of Iraq of today converted to Judaism, and they built themselves a palace. We never knew where the palace was. The only thing we knew, that Josephus Flavius tells us, that when the Romans set fire in the temple, it reached as far as the palace of the kingdom of Adiabene. That was the name of the kingdom. So we discovered its thing. Now, this is another new discovery only 2 years ago when Mount Zion was excavated and were discovered here two series of walls, one of them from the Second Temple period and one from the Byzantine period. You must understand that with the victory of Christianity, suddenly Jerusalem, as I said, became the capital of the Christian world because of its importance in Jesus' life. Many pilgrims came to Jerusalem. Many people, monks, priests, the church people, many of them came and lived in Jerusalem. The city grew immensely. So the Empress Eudoxia, who was the wife of Theodosius II, decided to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And this is here, in this quarry, I cannot indicate now, but in this quarry, remains of her wall were discovered. This is another picture of the same thing. Now, I want to go quickly only to some things to show you. I'll do it like that. The citadel of Jerusalem is completely renovated, rebuilt, and we found here many remains from the Maccabean and Herodian stones. An aerial photograph of the place is very important because it was the Muslims who were firstly to make a citadel here. You see, the citadel itself with its towers is Crusader, but down below you can see walls and a round tower which are Muslim. And for us it is important for the future development of Jerusalem. I'll run quickly. This is important picture. Maybe if you allow me 5 more minutes or less, I will tell you what. This was discovered about a year ago on a sewage pit. You can see that this is, you see the round part. It was used in the Muslim period as a sewage, and it has an inscription. The inscription immediately was understood to be from the time of Hadrian. And the important thing is that we attached it to a stone which is the property of the Franciscan friars for years. You see this one. It is in the garden of the Franciscan friars. When they joined the two pieces together, there is one inscription who is talking about the blessed Hadrian who came to visit Jerusalem. Why is it so important? Because this is the only testimony which we have about his visit, about his visit, which actually caused the construction of Jerusalem as a pagan city. So you understand, the inscription is the first time that we have a proof to the works which we always knew, that he visited Jerusalem, but it is the first time that we find something living. He built Jerusalem with paved street, really very well planned as a Roman city. I'm running quickly because I want to show you two more points. According to the writings, when the Virgin went to Egypt on the way, she rested. And indeed, in the property of the Greek Orthodox, exactly halfway between Jerusalem and Bethlehem, we found an octagonal church, which is called the Katisma. Katisma means a place of sitting. It is one of the typical octagonal churches which we have in Jerusalem, which are called martyria, place of testimony, place of evidence, to show that the places which the events mentioned in the Bible are there. Now, what is so typical to those places is that always in the middle is the object for which the church was built. In this case, the stone on which the Virgin sat in the Holy Sepulchre, the tomb of Jesus, in the Nativity in the middle, also an octagon, was the cradle of Jesus. On top of Mount Olives, it was built as the center where Jesus was standing when he taught his students, and the Ascension, the stone from which he ascended to heaven. This type of churches, we call them martyria, and here was discovered a martyrium. It was discovered in the year 2000. So the government of Israel decided to dig it, to restore it, and to make it into a present of the Jewish state to the Christian world of the time. The return of the Jews to Jerusalem in the Muslim period is very well marked by findings. We know where they came to live, because the Hadrian forbade the Jews living in Jerusalem. This prohibition continued under the Christians, and then when the Muslims came, they allowed 70 Jewish people to settle. So not only we discovered Jewish pieces of jewelry, this is a pendant, a gold pendant, showing the candelabrum. You see, tripod. It shows the shofar, you know, the horn, and it shows something which cannot be deciphered. We know even where the houses were, because on the lintel of the houses, we can see the menorahs, so we know this was Jewish. And now, just the last one I will show you, because we don't have time for more. Here you can see the Dome of the Rock. The Dome of the Rock, nothing new. The drawings, you know, the plan of the building, the section of the building, the plan on the other side of the cave underneath are all known. So why did they bring it here? You know that also UNESCO decided Jews don't have any connection to Jerusalem, no connection to the temple area, nothing at all. This is in spite of the fact that we have got hundreds, and I say hundreds, of documents who show that when the Muslims built the Dome of the Rock, they built it because they knew that this was where the temple built by King Solomon. So they did not refrain from doing something very interesting, which only now we understood. This is a piece of decoration. Everybody knows this is decoration. But when you take the crowns of the kings of Persia or the crowns of the Byzantine emperor, it is identical to this one. I don't know if there is somebody here from Hungary. Is there anybody who has ever seen the Hungarian royal crown? It is in the treasury of Budapest, of the Museum of Budapest. Exactly the same thing, but they've got a cross there which is a bit tilted. That's what there is. In other words, when the Arabs built the Dome of the Rock, they decided to bring something of royalty to show this. The first construction here was of kings. And who are the kings who did that? David built the altar and Solomon built the temple. And so we can see, and this is only one of the so many things which I wish I could have another hour to show you, how interesting it is that the spirit of David over Jerusalem is there. And to Christian audience, I don't have to tell you, because you remember that on the Palm of Sunday, on Palm Sunday, when Jesus is coming to Jerusalem, and the children are sitting on the trees, and people are spreading their clothing for him to step on it when he comes with a white donkey, what do the people chant to him? Hosanna to the King of David. This is what they say, because it cannot be other. I can say that not only the city of David is a section of Jerusalem, but the contrary, Jerusalem is the city of David. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.